Okay, I want you to imagine you, it might be hard for some, but imagine you own a house, and then imagine you decide to sell it. And you sell it for $600,000. Small one-bedroom unit in Hornsby. And then when you sell it, you're convicted of the need in God's church, and you come to me and you hand me a check for $500,000. And you say, "Bruce, I've just sold my house for $500,000. Here is all the money. I want you to use it for the needs of the church." Now, I haven't always been keeping my eye on the housing market. I don't know why, but I was. And I saw your house up for sale, and I noticed that it sold for $600,000, not $500,000, like you told me. Now, I could say, in response to your $500,000 check, Ian will be very happy as the building work gets done, I could say, "Look, thanks very much. That is so generous of you. That's wonderful." And I could just ignore the fact that you lied about it. You kept a bit of money. You know, big deal. Okay, thanks very much. I'm guessing that's probably what I'd say. And I want you to test me. Now, I could say, "Liar. Take your money and get out of our church." Can you imagine me saying that? And Ian faints. That's right. "Give me that money and get out of our church." That's right. How would you respond to that? I mean, how would you respond if you were in my position? Because this is exactly what happens in Acts chapter 5. Here are Ananias and Sapphira, members of the church. They sell their property and they take some of the money to the apostles. The only thing is they keep some of it themselves, but they tell the apostles in front of the church that this is all of the money. You know, they just keep a little bit for themselves. And Peter knows. And he says to Ananias, "How can you do this? How can you lie like this?" And Ananias responds by falling down dead. Just like that. Ananias' wife turns up 3 hours later after her husband's been buried. She doesn't know what's going on. She comes up. Peter quizzes her about the money and the sale of the property. She gives the same answers, lying. And Peter says the same thing. How could you do this? And she drops down dead. Is what they did really that serious that they deserve to die? What lesson is that really teaching the church? If you're going to sell your house, be honest about how much you give into it. Big deal. They kept a bit of money themselves. I mean, they could have just said, "Look, we've kept a bit of money. Here's the rest of it." But they laid a lie. They didn't tell the whole truth. But what's the big deal? Why does God deliver such a severe judgment on them? Why is God so harsh? Well, it's because Ananias and Sapphira are the first termites of the church of God. They are termites. Let me explain that. What does a termite do? They eat a house from the inside out. They eat through the support beams. They eat through the floorboards. They eat through the walls. They eat through the electrical wiring. And eventually, one day, the whole house collapses. They burrow just all around the place, but not into the light, because they hate the light. They stick just below the surface, slowly, sometimes not slowly, destroying the house. Liars like Ananias and Sapphira destroy God's house from the inside. And you know, there's an Ananias and Sapphira in every church. And I'm not making eye contact with anyone in particular. How do I know that? Because I have been Ananias. And I reckon you've been Ananias. Ananiases are those people who desire to make themselves look good. Look good, especially to the people around them. We lie. We deceive. We take credit that we don't deserve. We grandstand in front of people. We make sure those biggest gestures of generosity are in front of people. Or if we're doing something that's really wonderful, that we make sure people see it. None of us can be self-righteous when we read this story and we see what Ananias and Sapphira did. None of us can be self-righteous. Think of the commitments to God that you have not honoured. Think about the promises that you've made that you haven't kept. Think about the motives that you had that weren't always pure. Our giving is not always selfless. Our generosity is not always self-sacrificial. And it's a scary thing to think that we could possibly be like Ananias and Sapphira, because God strikes them down dead. If we actually can recognise that drastic action and think, if we're like them, then is it possible that God could think of us like that? Why is this such a big deal, this little lie? Like termites, they're little, but they have huge consequences. Huge consequences. They destroy whole houses. Ananias and Sapphira lied to the church of God. They lied to God. They tested the Spirit of God. They've started to eat away at the church. But they simply do not take the church of God seriously. Here's our question today that I really want us to think about. How seriously do you take being a part of the community of Jesus? How seriously do you take being a part of God's church? So far in Acts, we've heard a lot of incredible stories about the amazing growth, thousands converted, amazing healings. People are looking after one another incredibly. They're giving their possessions up for those needs of the church, the needs of the people. There's this unity that's just unbelievable. Yet there were others like Ananias and Sapphira, and I imagine in a church of a few thousand, there possibly are others that are like Ananias and Sapphira and doing similar things. But there's people like Ananias and Sapphira who feel that it's okay to lie a bit. Who cares? No one gets hurt, the church gets a stack of money, I look good, you know, what's the harm? And God strikes them down. And in that action, God shows and reminds people that this is His church, His unstoppable church. God strikes them down. That sends the message to the church that you belong to me. You are not like other little groups in the community. This is not something that the church of God does. We don't aim to make ourselves look better. We don't tell little white lies, no matter how small. We don't treat each other like that, and we don't treat God like that. We are the church of God, and we are serious about our commitment to God. It's an amazing action, just striking them down dead, but that is God laying claim to His church. At the end of this chapter, if I can just jump forward a little bit with a general point, the apostles are on trial by the Sanhedrin. And a Pharisee named Gamaliel says, look, just let them go. Don't worry about them. If they're not from God, they'll disappear, just like Theudas and Judas the Galilean. And we all remember who they were. And that's important information. What he's telling us is that, think about all the other people that have popped up. There's Theudas, there's Judas. There are people. Theudas had 400 followers. Judas started the revolution. They're guys that started the movement, they sprung up overnight, they ran their course, and then they died out. And that's important information for us to understand the context in Acts of what's happening here. The Christians are seen as another group, just like that revolutionary, just like that social reform guy, just like that communist party, just like that political group. It's just another group, guys. Just let them go. If it's not from God, and it won't last. You see, the culture here is that there are groups springing up all over the place. Is Christianity just another social reform? Is it just another political revolution? Is it just a way, a big building that we put bins on the outside for people to get rid of their unwanted clothes? Is that what we are? Because there's plenty of groups like that. No, God strikes down Ananias and Sapphira. He makes the statement, no, Christianity is not just some other social reform. Christianity is not just some other group. This is my church. This is where the Spirit of God lives. There's no place for lying. There's no place for grandstanding. There's no place to make a name for yourself. If you lie here, you're lying to God and not men. Now, Paul reminds us in Corinthians that we are the temple of God. We are where His Spirit lives. And so when we deceive, We wrong God. This is God's church. You know, we've seen Ananias and Sapphira struck down dead. Hundreds of people are healed in the next section. Demon-possessed people are freed. And what happens to the people all around as they're watching this? As they're watching this spectacle of this other group just popping up. The people are seized with fear at what is happening. My goodness, they lied and they dropped dead. My goodness, that person was in Peter's shadow and he got up and walked. That person's been demon-possessed for years and it's just over now. And they are seized with fear, that awe, that shock. They're not seeing. For the first time, these people are not seeing just another social reform. They're not seeing just another revolution. They're seeing something that is different. They're seeing power. They're seeing the strength of God working in these people. These people are different. And then when we get to verse 17... then the persecution starts. And it only gets worse from here on. Now, we've seen the termites destroying from inside. Now we're going to see the fire start to consume God's church from the outside. The Sadducees are filled with jealousy. Verse 17. They are filled with jealousy. People are not following them anymore. They arrest the apostles. They put them in jail. And that night, once again, God says, hey, this is my church. This is my unstoppable church. He sends an angel who sets them free from prison and says to them these words in verse 20 to the apostles, go, stand in the temple courts and tell the people the full message of this new life. And then the apostles are called to the Sanhedrin. Oh my goodness, they're gone. Where did they go? Oh, they're in the temple, in the marketplace. They're telling people all about Jesus. Bring them here. We won't arrest them because they're a bit more powerful than us now. We might get stoned to death if we do anything nasty to them. So just bring them here and talk nicely to them. And they brought them there and they are accused of the same thing they were told not to do in this chapter, in the last chapter as we looked at last week. Don't speak about Jesus. So they're accused of speaking about Jesus. And their answer, verse 29, it's really straightforward. We must obey God rather than men. That's what this church is about. It's about listening to God and not men. It's about obeying God. It's about following God. It's about working for God. It's about giving for God and not men. The Sadducees were furious. They wanted the apostles killed just like they wanted Jesus killed. But they didn't kill him because a Pharisee, a well-respected man by the name of Gamaliel, sent the apostles out of the room and spoke to the rest of the Sadducees on his own. And he says, verse 38 and 39, leave these men alone, let them go, for their purpose, if their purpose or activity is of human origin, it'll fail. If it's from God, you'll not be able to stop these men. They were persuaded at least this time to let the apostles go. They had them flogged to within an inch of their life, most likely, and ordered them not to speak about Jesus. And as these apostles that had probably been flogged 39 times or something, barely breathing, in agonising pain, dragged themselves and helped one another from that arena where they'd been flogged, they went out rejoicing and doing exactly the same thing that they were just told not to do. Nearly dead, they rejoice and tell people about Jesus. Cannot comprehend the persecution that began on that day. Cannot comprehend it. Not in this culture. Of what they went through and walked away from rejoicing and went on pressing on to speak about Jesus. See, they are listening to God. They're told to speak about Jesus and they do. They take God seriously. Let's move to the heart, what I think is the heart of this chapter. Go back to verse 11, and I want to read to you a few verses. If you've got your Bibles open, please open them. These are amazing verses of what happens after Ananias and Sapphira are struck down. From verse 11, great fear seized the whole church and all who heard about these events. The apostles performed many miraculous signs and wonders among the people, and all the believers used to meet together in Solomon's colonnade. No one else dared join them, even though they were highly regarded by the people. Nevertheless, more and more men and women believed in the Lord and were added to their number. People within the community of God and people outside it were seeing something different. This was not another little political movement. People didn't just drop dead on the spot. People weren't just miraculously healed. This was something different. And as people see these things happening, there are two responses that actually come out, and they nearly seem to contradict each other. Until you actually see that they're the way that people are responding. And they're great ways to respond. Have a look at these two ways. In verse 13, no one else dared join the apostles. No one else dared join them. And the second response in verse 14, more and more men and women believed in the Lord and were added to their number. You can harmonise them in many different ways, those statements, but really I think they're giving us two very good reactions. So there are some people who look at what is happening in this group and look at the amazing things and they say, I would not dare to join them. They are serious about that, whatever they believe in. I don't want to go near them. I fear their incredible life. I fear their God. I don't even want to associate with them. They are fearful people. Recognise that this is God's church. And then there's the other response. People see it and think, man, I can't wait to join them. This is finally a group that actually has something that means something. It's a group that really takes what they're talking about seriously, even to the point of suffering and death. This is real power. This is something that is real, something meaningful. See, they're both great responses for a church to hear. Because they both say one thing. They both say that people are seeing this church and saying, this is a church that doesn't muck around. This is a church that is deadly serious about what they believe. They're not playing. They're not mucking around. I want you to imagine, I can't do this, but I'm sure you might be able to. Imagine that you wanted to join a football team, or maybe a bowls team, or maybe a craft group, or you know, just a group, you know, some sort of team. We'll go with football for the moment, because it's the one I'd least likely to join myself. And you go down to see a few teams in action, and the first team you see, there they are, on the field, they're having fun. They're mucking around, they're kicking the ball around, someone takes a break, has a beer. A couple of guys aren't there for practice because they couldn't be bothered coming today, they had something else on. And then there's, you know, just a lot of fun happening. Oh, mucking around. No one's seriously, you know, training. I think that's Manly, by the way. No one's really serious about anything you're doing. But they're having fun and it all looks good. And then you go and you see another group. And they might not be dressed as well, but they're training really hard. And someone starts goofing off and everyone else pulls them in a line. And someone doesn't turn up to practice and they get strict discipline over it. And they're doing exercise runs all the time. They're training really hard and they're all focused on exactly the same thing. Now you could think, man, I fear to join that group because that looks really serious. Or you could think, well, if I'm going to play football, if I really want to play this sport, then I want to do it seriously. I want to join a team that is serious about what they're doing. I suppose you could just take that other option, couldn't you? The other one looks more fun. I turn up when I feel like it. It's fun. You laugh around. You can pretty much do what you want. No one's going to yell at you or anything. It's just all good fun and it's just there for the enjoyment. What do you reckon people see when they look at us as the Church of God? Which football team? We're the ones laughing, having so much fun that's really all that matters. Or are we the team that takes it seriously? Are we the ones that are working hard? Doesn't mean we can't have fun. But is that all we do? Is that what we are about? When people look at us, do they see people having just, you know, having a bit of a laugh in life? Or do they see people who take God seriously? People who are committed to God's mission, people who are committed to one another, people who are standing against the opposition. There's two other responses I reckon are pretty horrible. People look at us and say, I want to join them. That looks like fun. Or when they say, I don't want to join them, they're no different to me. I could join any club in this area and I'd get the same thing. What's the difference with them? I see no difference. That church, well, bowls club's exactly like that. RSL club's the same as that. Big deal. Acts 5 gives us a look at a church that is serious about following Jesus. And that's a real challenge, because it reminds us that there are always people looking at us, but most importantly, God is looking at us and asking that question: do you take me seriously? His son on the cross, that's serious. It's a serious life-changing event. That is what this church preaches. We have fun, we don't preach fun. We are serious. God is looking at us and asking us that question as we look at Acts 5. As he strikes down Ananias of fire, he puts his eyes on the whole of God's church and says, do you take me seriously? Do you take your commitment to me seriously? Do you take your eternal life seriously? Commitment to Jesus cannot be half-hearted. Let me finish with this story. It's light-hearted. I remember in one of the churches I was in, I looked up in the church, the paint was just peeling all across like half of the church. And I said to someone, it was a group of people, I said, gee, the roof needs painting. When was it last done? Thinking, you know, 30, 40 years ago. They said, oh, last year, actually. So really, last year, and it's still peeling off. It's just like flakes were falling on your head in the service. I said, well, what do you mean? It was done last year and it's flaking off already. Was it a damp in the roof or something? They said, no, it's a church job. Pardon? I said, it's a church job. Well, I know it's a job for the church to do, but no, it's a church job. When you do something for the church, you don't worry about washing it down. You don't get the good paint. You just slap it on and cover it up, and you get back to your own home where you do the real stuff. You ever heard that expression, church job? Church job. Couldn't be bothered doing it properly. It's not your house. Church commitment. Just church. I can turn up when I want. It's not that important if I don't turn up. There's 100 other people that can do it. Why do people have to depend on me to do that? It's a church job. Do you take God seriously? These are harsh words to hear, because every one of us can be an Ananias or Sapphira. We need to hear them and we need to respond. We need to be able to say to God, look, I may not have. In fact, I haven't in a lot of ways. But I plan to. From today on.